right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I'm Chris Solomon, joined by our resident Canadian expert, or Sergio Garcia consultant, I believe, Adam Sarson. And we got a little sound quality improvement on the podcast. Adam, what's going on?
No, not much, man. How you doing? It's good to know that I can be both a resident Canadian expert and the, you know, probably the president of the Sergio Fan Club. I guess it's me and Tron at this point, but it's good to be back. It's good to know that, you know, you finally kicked to the curb guys like Rory and Jordan to get to me. So that's definitely good to hear.
I think we probably would have done one of these weekly if our schedules ever lined up. But now I've got to record this like after midnight just to accommodate your schedule. I'm just saying.
You're the one who moved, not me. So don't put this on me.
That's actually fair. So is Jordan Spieth back?
where did he go? I don't quite understand. I don't know if people know exactly what we're kind of talking about, but so yesterday at some point after Jordan won, Golf Week put out a tweet that said, "Looks like Jordan Spieth is back," which I don't understand this in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I genuinely like Golf Week. I think it was just kind of a one-off little thing. And to be fair, I didn't see it anywhere else. It's not like it's a bit of a straw man thing. I think that, you know, we saw one person say it. It was kind of ridiculous that even one person said it, but it's not that big of a deal. But no, he's been playing like this for a while. To see it all kind of come together in one place, though, it was a little bit. It was kind of scary to me, and I mean that in a good way. In that, I mean, he played very conservative, not even that conservative Sunday, but didn't really get a lot happening. Otherwise, he could have won by 7 or 8 if he had anything falling or if he was getting it a little bit closer to the hole. But I know a lot. I threw out a comparison to Tiger in a tweet, and I got the feedback I was expecting, and people not understanding that I just wanted to share an interesting nugget that at the age of 23 and a half, Tiger had 10 wins in one major. Spieth has 9 wins in 2 majors. I just find that fascinating. I know Tiger, you know, in his first 100 starts had 28 wins. Spieth had 9. I just find it really interesting that this guy took a very different route to get here, came out at age 19 with no status, kind of got a jump start on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, he has more starts, but to have won 9 events by the time you're at this age, that's noteworthy, and it's not meant to be a comparison to Tiger, but, I mean, that means something, right?
No, it absolutely does. I mean, I mean, like you said, though, you know what you're going to get when you compare anybody to Tiger, even if it is just in an offhand remark. I mean, the fact is that, you know, no one will ever be what Tiger was at any point. But no, it's ridiculous to see somebody this good come along. I mean, the fact is that it's probably because of Tiger that we don't even appreciate Jordan as much as we should, to be honest. I mean, like you said, I mean, if Tiger goes out and wins, you know, like you said, 28 or whatever of his first 100 starts, I mean, he's put everyone else in kind of a bit of an impossible situation to us for us to really truly appreciate. It's the same kind of thing that we go through with Rory whenever, you know, Rory goes 3 or 4 months without a win, and we all, well, not us, but people like to think that he's gone through some kind of a drought, and it's really, really not the case. Spieth's amazing, and you're right though. I mean, what we saw on Sunday, I mean, he was basically playing like a prevent defense and just begging Kelly Kraft to come get him. And it looked for a little bit like Kraft might make a charge, but I mean, it was never really in doubt at any point.
I was a little bit nervous. I don't want to say nervous, but like I at least kept my attention a little bit. I thought it was a pretty boring Sunday. But again, part of the reason I wanted to make that Tiger comparison is at this point going forward, we cannot make it at all. Because at this age, Tiger spent his next 13 months winning 12 tournaments, including 4 majors. So I just wanted to get that out there, that this was the last chance to kind of throw in a fun little nugget as to how amazing the start of Spieth's career has been. And I think to a certain extent, it doesn't get appreciated. And just the fact that he won two majors so young, and if he had spread out his two majors, 1-1 in 15, 1-1 in 16, we wouldn't have been dealing with the kind of crap that we were dealing with last year. And to be fair, I think overall people are being very fair about how he's played recently. And, you know, winning in Australia, had a very good start to the season in Hawaii, and now this. I think he lands, is a very safe prediction, I think he lands somewhere between the 2015-2016 season. Is that fair?
Yeah, he's talked about how good his 2015 was. And, you know, when he goes out and says things like, well, you know, if I would win two majors every year for the rest of my career, like, it would be, you know, be the best player ever. Like, it's not, and it's not even close. He didn't have a bad 2016, you know, and people, you know, it's really quite unfair to compare the 2016 to 2015, because again, he was so good for so long. It was kind of scary to watch him go through Pebble. I mean, his putter was so good, and even yesterday, like, he wasn't making a whole ton of things drop, but I mean, the rest of his game was on point too. I mean, just. He's got every facet of the game going right now, and it's really impressive to watch.
And that's the thing, and Porter kind of went off on this a little bit, that it's not just the putting. Like, his ball striking is absolutely incredible. It's off to an unbelievable start this year. I think he's like fourth or something in strokes gained approaching the green, and that's very skewed so far because there's not been very many events that have tracked it. And even this week, only two rounds counted in that stat and whatnot. But, I mean, you can see it. It's popping off the screen as well. He's hit like 85% of his greens so far this year, which is blowing away the rest of the tour. And he's converting those into birdies at like a 41% rate, which is second on tour. It's an incredible combination.
See, like, I think part of it is usually when we see, like, so there's no doubt that Spieth is an incredible putter, right? We all know that. I think part of what we kind of see from time to time is usually, like, you get these guys who are so good at one thing, right? So say Sergio is probably the best example. He is such a good ball striker that, you know, everything else kind of just falls by the wayside, and I think people kind of get used to that sort of thing. With Spieth, you know, he's such a good putter that for whatever reason it overshadows everything else, and people, like, we don't see guys like this very often who are so good from at every facet of the game that I think people just kind of assume that, okay, well, it's the putter that's really doing it for him, but in reality it's a perfect combination of both.
Yeah, Porter was mad. Porter was mad at what he wrote today.
Porter is always mad at, you know, anyone who comes at one of his, well, just like all of us are. I mean, anyone who kind of comes at the, you know, the guys that we like. But he's right though. He's not incorrect about what he was saying. I read that piece today. It was well argued. I mean, he's so good at everything that I think people just kind of fall back on, well, he's such a great putter. But no, it's really quite the opposite. He's just good everywhere.
They mentioned about 20 times on the broadcast that he looks more fit this year. I didn't really see it, but I was talking to a few people that just had noticed that his swing looks a little bit shorter this year, maybe. That may be able to add to his ability to make a repeatable action. It seemed like he was hitting his irons a little bit further than he normally was. He was at least keeping up with DJ on the distance of their irons.
I was going to say, there were a few times during the round that he put, during one of the rounds with DJ, where I was like, wow, he's actually like, he's right there with him. So, I mean, there could be something to that. I don't, but realistically, I don't think we can expect him to compete with DJ, you know, going forward, at least in terms of distance. But I mean, it's good to see.
Yeah. And it's a decent start to the year with the winners we've had so far. Nobody in their 30s has won an event in 2017 to this point. It's pretty ridiculous. It was funny. Spieth got asked a question about Justin Thomas after winning the tournament.
Yeah, no, times have changed. Justin Thomas is no longer Jordan Spieth's good buddy, I guess. Part of it is going the other way around now.
Yeah, couldn't help but notice that he won an event immediately after taking a picture in a no-laying-up shirt. I'm just saying.
So you're saying that I should start taking photos in my no-laying-up gear, then?
Just swing by the No Laying Up Pro Shop. Anybody that wants to, you know, add a little consistency to see their ball striking. What are your thoughts overall on the event? The overall AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, three courses, everything we get as a fan experience. What are your overall thoughts?
See, It's really tough because, you know, from everything that I know you and I have both heard, is that it's a much better experience for the people on the ground than it is for people watching on TV. From a TV standpoint, I mean, CBS is in a bit of a tough, they're in a very tough position with the play spread out over three different courses. And, you know, there's obviously the play is so slow, with, you know, all the amateurs and, you know, alleged celebrities that end up going to this thing, that I don't know. I get the appeal of it. I certainly get the appeal of what it used to be when people didn't have access to, you know, the celebrities and whatever that people do now. You know, it was probably really cool to see, you know, Ben Crosby go out and play golf because you might not have a chance to see Ben Crosby up close and personal like that, you know, any other time. But, you know, seeing Justin Timberlake, I mean, Colt Ford and like these guys, like it's not the same as it used to be. That's for sure. Overall, no, I look, it's a shame to me that, you know, that the one time a year that we get to see Pebble is in this event. You know, and, you know, we don't get to see Cyprus anymore. I could definitely do without it, that's for sure.
I get that there's a lot of history there. I really do. I know it's probably way bigger than me as a millennial golf fan, and probably this event is not targeting me. And it is something, you know, we always crave things that are different on the PGA Tour, and this is a bit of a different event. And again, it may be just that just not targeted for our age group, but you got to give your fans at this point some kind of option to be able to watch the golf tournament. In that there's got to be some kind of online or something that I don't need to be watching on a Saturday afternoon. Like you said, Colt Ford and then Larry the Cable Guy pulling a guy out of the audience. Like, yeah. It's just not funny. Like, I know some people may think it's funny, like to me, and maybe, again, we're the minority. Maybe the hardcore golf fan really isn't who dominates a CBS or Golf Channel broadcast on a normal day, but...
I will say this though. I will say that CBS was better this year than they have been in the previous years. I mean, you know, they weren't set up on 17 to do interviews with every amateur group that went through on Saturday. You know, we didn't get Peter Costas wasn't analyzing, you know, the swing of Gary Muldeer, whoever that is. But no, I mean, look, I think it was better, but I mean, yeah, I think you made a good point. Like, I know my parents, for instance, are, you know, they like my mom likes watching guys like Carson Daly and whoever else. But no, I mean, for people like us, no, it's not for us at all.
Yeah, I don't know who's laughing at this stuff is the main thing. Especially, no. I know Bill Murray's a legend, but man, that act is just it's way too tired. And yeah, I don't
I'm
know.
I'm ready to eject on Bill Murray. I like, don't get me wrong, incredibly funny dude, great actor, but I'm tired of this at this point.
For this event, yeah, without a doubt. I totally agree that CBS did a much, much better job. I swear, I think that Jim Nance, his comment about on Saturday when he basically came on the air and said how much golf they were going to be showing. I swear that is directed at the Twitter folks. That's myself. I know Tron deserves a lot of credit for how much criticism. It's weird to say, but how much criticism he's given CBS. If anyone up there thinks like we give CBS a lot of grief just out of, you know, habit or out of just fun or just because we're trolls, that's not the case at all. It's like we actually care about the networks giving a good product to their fans. We think we are in kind of a unique position where we have a decent following and can voice our opinion and kind of get some attention. And people, there's no one out there that's reaching out to us and like thinking that CBS's broadcasts are fine. Like, we are just trying to act as a voice for the people. And I can almost I actually can guarantee, I know for a fact that it has at least gotten on the execs. Not, I don't know about the exec level, but I know that at least at the production level of CBS, they're aware of the feedback they've gotten from social media on the broadcast. And I, without a doubt, think that at least factored into them removing themselves from the 17th hole and not showing celebrity swings in slow motion. But they did limit. It seems like a Saturday was a ton of amateur golf, but Sunday it looked like they were dead set on not showing the amateurs.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, guys, you know, every once in a while, like my whole thing about showing the amateurs has always been like, yeah, someone does something amazing, or, you know, you want to show, you know, the Bob Stoops Pro Tracer from the other day where he basically just fired one directly into the crowd on 17.
That's great.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, look, and to your point about, like, what about the criticism of CBS, it's like, you know, NBC's golf coverage has been a lot better over the last few years. I've loved everything pretty much that Fox has done. You know, with their USGA stuff. PGA Tour Live is fantastic for hardcore golf fans. You know, the European Tour broadcasts are basically golf shot after golf shot with very little to no fluff every time out. It just seems to me like CBS has fallen behind, even if they were, you know, quite a bit better this year than they were last.
Yeah, and make no mistake, they're not there yet. We saw some positive steps. I think Tron's going to put a piece together. I don't want to step on his toes too much on that, but I think it's definitely worthy of discussion in that we're going to continue to give feedback on what we think golf fans want. I think it really does matter. There's enough I see it in my mentions every single week, and when CBS is on, and the amount of commercials, and as soon as they can figure out a way to mix in showing commercials during play rather than taking so many breaks, please, please, please find a way to do that. I know NBC did it for the Ryder Cup. I know it's probably not super easy, but man, they gotta have some focus groups. I gotta imagine more goes into it than just what they're doing.
And we haven't even mentioned the 30-minute break, which deprives us every year at Pebble of the leaders playing through the best stretch of golf in the U.S. You know, like I think Brendan Porath mentioned this. You know, it was Phil last year, who we didn't get to see play basically 6, 7, and 8. You know, this year it was Jordan. Like, it's just, you know, something. I understand that there's a lot of logistical problems with all this, and believe me, I'm not the guy who's going to be deciding all of these things for CBS at any point soon, but, like, there has to be a better way than what we've been given.
And I've been told, or I'm not just me, it's out there that the reason for the 30-minute gap is there needs to be a graphics switchover from Golf Channel to CBS or whatever. But here's the thing: we don't care about the graphics. I get the international feed here, so when they go to commercial, I don't know who it is. Sometimes it's John Swantek, sometimes it's another guy that is just announcing
like
golf that's going on.
He sounds like Swantek.
He does. It's hard to figure out who it is or if it's Swanee or not, but they just show golf. It may not be the most relevant golf, but they show golf. So I know there's cameras rolling out there. I know there's still a broadcast in some way. You got to find a way to give that 30 minutes back to the fans, even if it means going online, which is so less than ideal. They've at least figured out that you can cut. You can go and watch online if the basketball game runs over, like it runs over every single
week.
Every single week. So yeah, there's at least that. Yeah, can you take us 15 minutes longer on Golf Channel and then bring it in at 2:15 or 3:15 or whatever the time is, just to avoid that basketball game? But yeah, that's enough on CBS. But yeah, progress being made, but please keep it up, the change. You got any Tiger takes?
Oh God. Yeah, I guess. I mean, look, the thing is, like, does anyone actually believe that he didn't hurt himself on the flight over there?
I don't necessarily believe that he hurt himself on the flight. I don't know. I don't think it was good for him to fly 16 hours, but I mean, I think it was hurt. I don't want to say hurt in the gym, but I think he, the pictures, but what he looked like at the Hero versus what he looked like when he showed up in Dubai, it's a different person. Like, it looked like he was lifting two times a day. And that's what I've heard from a very, very, very reliable source, that people within his team are very not happy about the way he continues to work out. And I know that it's kind of a double-edged sword here, because I kind of tend to roll my eyes at just saying that that working out leads to injuries, especially when it relates to Rory, but that's a different topic. But at Tiger, at that age, at 41, with all the back problems he's had, I just don't think he needs to be in the gym lifting a ton of weights, and that's what it certainly looks like, despite what Nota Begay came out and said that, you know, his workouts look way different, which sounded like a response directly to what I tweeted. So I don't know if it was necessarily the flight that did it, but I definitely think that he's been doing some kind of activity within that time when he was free swinging and skinnier in December versus what he looked like in Dubai.
Yeah. Sorry, I should rephrase. Maybe not necessarily on the flight, but there was there definitely was a difference between. So like when we were, I'm not sure if you were actually up watching that first round from Dubai. I know that a few of us were, but
I was not.
So when he was, it was so obvious watching that first round in Dubai that something was wrong. You know, the first swing, I mean, it was basically a duck hook, 260 yards left. And it was a horrible swing. He winced horribly again, pretty much right after he hit it. You know, he made getting in and out of the bunkers in Dubai look like a much bigger chore than they actually were. Something definitely changed from Hero and from Torrey to what it was in Dubai. Now, I know that, like, you know, when I was following along on Twitter during that first round in Dubai, people were kind of just saying, oh, well, it's the new normal. Like, he walks a little slower and this and that. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can understand that. But there's a big difference between a new normal of Tiger walking a little slower and looking like he was in pain the entire way. And for him to say after the round that he was completely fine, I mean, look, maybe he did spasm at some point after the round. I'm not even going to suggest that he's, you know, that he hasn't re-injured it entirely, but it's something definitely seemed up in that first round. And I find it a little difficult to believe that, you know, that he was fine the entire way. I don't know what this means going forward. I mean, look, he's obviously not playing this week at Riv, and he's not playing the Honda after that. If he's actually that's one hell of a spasm, if that's what that is.
It's clearly not, they're not totally transparent with what happened, and really it just, I wonder if he got locked into, you know, when he said no, it's not painful after that press conference and then had to withdraw, he basically kind of put Steiny in a little, he sent Steiny out to deal with it much like Bubba would have done with Ted. I don't know, man. I was very hopeful about this comeback. As soon as I saw him swinging, though, at Torrey, it just looked way different than it did in Bahamas. And I think he was wearing sweaters and stuff down there, and you couldn't really see the muscle right. That was back on. It just looked different in Dubai, and it's not his fighting weight, I would say. So I don't know. I'm concerned about the comeback. I think it sounds like he will be back for Bay Hill. He's not ruled that out, and when I had heard that he was going to withdraw, I heard it was out for 4 weeks, and I went and looked at the schedule immediately and saw that it lines up with Bay Hill. So
look, my thought has always been that if he could get himself healthy for a decent amount of time, like, not like he's never going to be 100% healthy, like he's admitted as much to everybody who has asked him. My thought has always been that if he could get himself to a point where he could just play, say, even for just a year straight without having to pull out of any event, that, you know, he would, you know, we do owe him some time to figure out this new swing and to figure out what he's doing to get himself back into playing shape. And I would have thought that if he could keep himself healthy, that, you know, he would probably win again. Maybe obviously not to the level that, you know, he was winning at, you know, 15 years ago, but at the very least, you know, win an event here and there, you know, contend in a few majors on the weekends and everything. But obviously, you know, that's all entirely dependent on his health. And right now it's not looking anywhere near positive.
Do you think we see him at the Masters?
Yeah, I do. Unless he's actually re-injured that, you know, the nerve problem that he had that caused the surgeries in the first place, I can't imagine that he's going to take the Masters off. I don't know what we're going to see. I mean, look, there's no safer bet in the world than him missing the first fairway left on Thursday. But I mean, outside of that, I have no idea what to expect from him.
He'll probably top 10 it for all we know. But that's enough on Tiger. I just felt like we had to at least address it. But I didn't get a chance to recap the waste management last week. We don't have to go too far in depth on it like we did AT&T, but feel like it's definitely worth mentioning what Hideki Matsuyama's done so far this year. But would you judge me if I said I don't enjoy watching Hideki play?
I've heard you spout off this take, you know, in spurts from time to time. You're gonna have to walk me through it though. I mean, outside of the fact that he, I will admit, he does play a little slow, and by a little slow I mean, you know, glacial. But like outside of that, I don't know what the issue is really.
It's not even his pace. It's just the whole tour sauce of acting upset at every shot was like, it was kind of funny for like a while. I let it go for a really long time. And then I think more people starting to notice it and chime in on it. I know Tron's been on the same path too. Like, it kind of wore me down. I'm kind of like, I don't enjoy this. Like, come on. Like, you hit the ball 8 feet left of the flag and you act like it's going OB. Like, it got old really quick. And
he's ruining your brand.
A little bit. I'm taking it very personal.
Only one who does that, though. Like, in fairness,
he's
like,
the worst, though. He is.
No, I agree that he does exaggerate it to a point. But yeah, that doesn't bother me so much, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, I guess I kind of look at it, and I love someone who, I mean, as I'm sure you can tell based on my affection for guys like Sergio, I just love guys who are such high quality ball strikers that I can't get on board with this. I really can't.
It's not that I dislike him. It's just, I'm annoyed by it to the point where I'm right there with you. I love watching like good ball strikers just, you know, stuff it and pimp it, you know, like with confidence. And I hate that he ruins it every time he hits a good shot. He ruins it by acting like it's terrible. It's not that I dislike him at all. He's just kind of falling into that Jason Day category for me, where it's like, I don't really enjoy watching you play. And I don't think that it's my American bias, but it might be, and I'm just not self-aware enough to really understand it. But it just
does it have anything to do with the fact that we made that bet about 3 years ago that I haven't been able to pay you back on yet, or is it?
I'm not allowed to comment on bets that have not been paid because I owe Bacon like so many hot dog, hamburger, whatever, pizzas, whatever. I don't even remember all the things we bet on, but I lost three in a row to end the season, and I haven't been able to pay any of them back. But yeah, do you owe me one or two rounds of golf because of that? We bet Spieth or Matsuyama to win a major first.
Yeah, I can't remember what we decided. I'm going to have to go back and look at the tweet. That was probably about 3 or 4 years old at this point. But yeah, no, I definitely did say that Hideki would win a major before Spieth. But, you know, I'm not convinced that Hideki won't have more majors than Spieth at some point in the future either. So I'm very bullish on his game. Just, you know, he's got a lot of work to do, obviously. But he's so good. And I I'm not fully, you know, Sean Martin level in the bag for him, but it's nowhere near as bad as you're making it out to be, I don't think.
Never go full Martin on Matsuyama, by the way. But I'm not making it out to be that bad. I hate when people, you know, when somebody is succeeding really at a really high level and coming in with like a bad take. This is a bad take of mine, but I can't.
That is a bad take.
I can't help how I feel about when I watch it. I mean, it shouldn't be the lead story, definitely, when it comes to Matsuyama. But the scary thing is, like, he still hasn't really figured the putting thing out. I think, and I'm not looking this up, I think he won with negative strokes gained putting in Phoenix.
He did. No, he did.
That's remarkable.
Look, he's got a lot of he has a lot of work to do. Don't get me wrong. I just, you know. I don't quite get the hatred for him. That's all.
It's not hatred. Don't put words in my mouth.
he was actually not. I'm looking it up right now. He wasn't a negative strokes gained putting, but he was barely a positive.
Like, if he could putt at and this isn't a shot at Rory's putting, but Rory's not known as like a top putter in the game. But if he could putt at even Rory's level, I think he might be the best player in the world. And he already might be the best player in the world. But
he can get to number one in the world with a win this week.
I know. That's crazy. That's deserved, though. I mean, the guy's lost to, like, two people in the last 3 months or something like that. Is that streak still active?
He didn't do so well at Sony and Farmers. But outside of that, yeah, it's been ridiculous. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do this year in the majors, that's for sure.
Me too. I'm fully on board. I love it. I'm in big support of this, just to make up for my awful take. But Jon Rahm is terrifying, by the way.
Yeah. We've been talking about John Rahm, it seems like, for like probably over probably almost 2 years now. He's the reason why the European Ryder Cup team should have changed the rules. I understand that it's not that big of a deal to play four European Tour events, but like John Rahm is a game changer for that European Ryder Cup team, and you should be absolutely terrified to see him play against you guys in France.
I'm terrified of him. I'm still not afraid of France at all, for the record. Just throwing that out there. I'm going to be steadfast in my
France in general, or the European Ryder Cup team in France.
European Ryder Cup team. I'm not scared. Still not scared.
I mean, is Bubba going to make the trip over there? Like, is he like what's the deal with him in France at this point? Like, I mean, if he doesn't make the team, like, there's no way that he's going over there as an assistant captain in France, right?
Does he still have a passport? I don't even know.
I have no idea. But yeah, no, like you don't need to be scared necessarily, but you know how cyclical these things are, and you know how volatile match play is. Like, you know, you get a couple of guys who are running hot, like you guys had a few months ago, and it's a completely different story.
Yeah, and it's a long way out to be talking actual results. But no, Rahm, has he taken up Euro Tour membership? I should know this, but has he?
Not that I know of. I believe the last thing that I read was that Thomas Bjorn was apparently going to be talking with guys like him and Paul Casey and Russell Knox and David Langmuir and all these guys to try to get them to play at least enough events to be eligible. I don't think any of them have actually taken up membership yet. I have a hard time believing that Casey's going to after he took such a stand against it a couple of years ago.
But he wouldn't have to do it this year anyways, right? He could just has to be next year, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't think he has to do it just yet.
Well, they laxed the rules at least a little bit. I would think that there was some consulting there with some of those guys that kind of like a hint, like, here, we're doing this for you. We made this easier for you. They wouldn't have done it if they didn't think it was going to make a material effect, which they should have done it. I'm glad they did it, because as much as I want the U.S. to win it every year, I want the tables, or I want it to be the best possible teams, and it doesn't feel right that
Sean Casey would have been a hell of an addition to that team.
A throwback there. He should have been on that team, and I don't want to run into the same issue. You brought up the Ryder Cup, for the record. I just want to put that on the record. And
shockingly, I was the one who brought up the Ryder Cup.
Do you have any thoughts on, I know you're not as heavily invested on this from the U.S. side as I am, but do you have any thoughts on the changes the U.S. team made to qualification and selection?
I don't. The one that Furyk made, where changing out the point system for basically for winners of events and not, like, that doesn't bother me so much. I mean, and I don't think you should be putting as much value on people winning tournaments versus, say, top five in consistently, but I don't think that matters so much. What I don't understand is why on earth they changed the final pick to not be after the Tour Championship. I understand, like, I know they're kind of saying that it's travel based and all that. But like, it's not like they're going over there on like a horse and buggy. Like they're going over there on a pretty quick flight from Atlanta to France. Like it's not like they need to, you know, this isn't that big of an issue. It's like the same thing that we saw when one of the reasons they didn't move it previously, under Tom Watson in 2014, they're like, well, we don't really know what we were gonna do with like the official team sweaters, and then like there's different sizes and this, and it's just like you're making excuses for no reason.
You should be doing everything in your power to make sure you have the best team. I get that there's a little bit of logistics problems that go with it. You can't tell me you can tee it up worse logistically than you did the lap in 2016, where, you know, the Ryder Cup week is basically starting in like 6 hours, and you don't know who the final player is on your team, and you're able to get him out there in a uniform and get his picture up on all the boards and all this stuff. I know it is kind of nitpicky, especially. I just wanted to be on record discussing this when it actually came out and not get second guessed for when I'm going to criticize it when it inevitably comes up. When the Horschel rule came out, I was a big fan of it. I thought it was a great rule. I thought the way it played out in 2014, it would have made a lot of sense. It's the schedule lines should line up the exact same way as it did in 2014. and they screwed up the timing of it. Like, what is the point of making your picks on September 3rd, your first three picks on September 3rd, and then the final pick on September 10th? What's the BMW going to tell you that you don't already know on September 3rd?
Yeah, no, look, the thing is, like, you know, it's not... Those are big points. Like, you can talk about the fact that it's only one guy, but if the one guy, like Ryan Moore, I believe, played, what, three matches in 2016, if he goes out and loses all three of those matches in a tighter event, like, that, those are important points. Like, every, you know, sure, is he as important as Patrick Reed, who's going to be playing all five matches? He's not, but, I mean, the fact is that those are important points. Like, trying to limit yourself like this, I've never understood. And like, I know you and I have talked about this before. It's like, you know, you and, I believe Rory mentioned it on your podcast with him, the first one, that, you know, if it was up to him, like, he would just take the top 12 in the world ranking and then just go from there. That would certainly take a lot of the intrigue out of what they were doing. Or, I mean, look, if it was up to me, like, I'd want total control. Like, let me pick the whole team. But I mean, that's obviously not going to happen either. I mean, I don't understand. Like, there, it just seems like they're, it just seems like they're limiting their options for no real sufficient reason.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I wrote about this on the website too, but just to clarify what I mean is that if you're going to save this last pick, like try to hold open for one hot guy, waiting till after the Tour Championship should leave you plenty of time, because unless there's a bye week between the BMW and the Tour Championship is going to end on like the 17th, and you have an entire week off before you even leave for France. It's not like the timing, it doesn't like the, and again, there's a chance that they put a bye week in front of the Tour Championship.
Right.
If that's the case, I still would rather just pick all four picks after the Dell Technologies or whatever the Deutsche Bank Championship is going to be.
Look, there's only 30 guys in the field at the Tour Championship, right? Now, yeah. Some of them are obviously not going to be American. There's going to be a bunch of them that aren't American. And you'd like to think that the ones that are American are probably on your team already. So, I mean, like, the chances of this, like, it's kind of silly to me that we're even talking about this. Like, they definitely don't need to do this the way they're doing it. And I just don't understand why.
Here's to hoping it doesn't matter, because it didn't end up mattering in 2016, but I felt like when it happened that it really forced Love's hand and he had no choice but to select Moore after what happened. If he makes that pick before the Tour Championship, he probably takes Bubba. I know for a fact he would have taken Bubba. So, again, it didn't end up mattering, but that's kind of using hindsight and a results-based formula to say it didn't matter, didn't hurt him, when it could have. And Moore was not a great fit for Hazeltine. He ended up playing very well, and you can't take that away from him. But, like, Bubba would have been, as much as I dislike Bubba, would have been a much better fit for Hazeltine, his style of play, with the way how far he hits it with no rough and just able to bomb it out there. But yeah, again, it didn't end up mattering, but let's just hope that,
what are your thoughts on you know, what happens if after the BMW, like, Furyk doesn't really have any real good options and he just picks himself? Like, that it could happen.
It could. Oh, it really could. I don't think he'll pick himself. I think he should have taken himself out even if he was going to qualify on points. Just because and people are, yeah, it's already a narrative that's getting floated. I talked about this with Porter, too. It's just like, I don't want to do this for a year and a half. Like, it's going to be easy clickbait for everyone. It's going to be a distraction. I know it's kind of just a silly movie.
It's kind of what Bones, I think Bones said it to you as well, about how, like, Phil doesn't even want to consider it until he knows that he's done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at with Furyk. It's like, I totally understand how, like, you guys don't want Furyk on this team, and that's completely understandable. But, like, if he goes out and he's clearly one of the best guys available and he can't pick himself because he's obviously the captain, it's like, it just doesn't make any sense. Just as a player, I don't understand why you'd put yourself up to it if you still think that there's an outside chance that you might be on the team yourself.
Yeah, I just stand by that, the fact that Furyk has had many, many great, great stroke play seasons and not played well in the Ryder Cup. Enough times that it's done for me. He's been on the team 9 times and had a losing record in 8 of them, if I remember right. So
I just wanted to bring this up just to hear.
I know. I hate having to do it. I'm more upset. We didn't even talk about that. They adjusted the point system, but they still don't include the fall events, which makes Make them count for 50%. Make them at least count. How can you say the fall events count for nothing for qualification?
I remember when that first came in. I guess that was ahead of the 2014, I think, Ryder Cup that they started putting that in. And I was actually in favor of it because I thought it made some sense. And then I started to think about it, and I'm like, no, this is stupid. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's just completely diminishing the events of for what, 3 or 4 months? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all either.
Yeah, it doesn't add up, but that's enough Ryder Cup, I think, 18 months out from the from the actual event, but it's never too early to talk Ryder Cup.
No.
Any other topics before we move to questions, because we got a lot of them?
If we have a lot, let's go.
Let's do it. My good friend, I'll go ahead and say it, my best friend, Frank Tedesco, wants to know if playing single-length irons and putting side saddle, he says a stupid hat is optional. If it saved you 5 strokes a round, do you switch?
Probably.
5 strokes a round's a lot.
5 strokes a round is too much. I mean, look, let's put in the caveat as well that I am very clearly nowhere near going to be at any point turning pro. You know, watching me swing is not something that anybody should ever be subjected to. But if I can go out there and save 5 shots a round, yeah, I'm absolutely going to switch. And the hat is definitely the least reprehensible part of this whole thing. There's no doubt about that.
Let's make it 2 strokes. Let's make the question 2 strokes. Are you switching for two?
Probably not, to be honest. I mean, again, it kind of depends on how good you are and what you're kind of doing, I guess. I mean, when I go out and play, like, if I, you know, my goal when I go out and play is to typically, on the courses I go out on, is to go out and shoot between, say, you know, 82 and 85, something like that. That's the plan. I mean, does that happen often? Probably about half the time. That's not worth 2 shots.
The single length irons doesn't bother me at all. Like, it really, like, people wouldn't even notice, really.
People wouldn't
for the
even
most
notice.
Part. Yeah, I'm not worried about that. Side saddle, it wouldn't be worth the ridicule, I don't think. So if I can get 1 shot from the single length irons, I'd do it, but I don't think I'd do another shot for the side saddle.
Always protecting those mentions, man. I liked it.
I butchered that question by making it way more by simplifying it, but we'll go on. You might know this guy, Craig Sarson, and this must be an inside joke, but Craig Sarson wants to know, to make par, how many fairways is too many fairways to the left?
So Craig's my brother, and this is absolutely in reference to, God, it was a round of golf that we played, I'm going to say, 7 or 8 years ago, and it was me, him, and my dad, and we're playing on it's a dogleg left, and I've never played this course before up until this point, and not only did I miss the fairway I was on, and the fairway adjacent to it on the left, I missed the next fairway. And I was, like, it is actually impossible to understand how far left I actually was at this point. And I had no idea what I had for a yardage. And I took out, I honestly don't even remember what I hit. And I basically, I hit it over a bunch of trees and got it right in front of the green, chipped on, and made my par. And I believe my brother made par as well, you know, obviously the traditional way of, you know, in the fairway and then on the green and 2 putts. But, yeah, that is why he asked that question.
I had a buddy, my buddy Leif, when we played in Scotland at Carnoustie a couple years ago. I'm not joking that he missed, for the majority of the day, he was 2 fairways left or right. And most definitely not making par from that. He had a great time, though. I got to give him a lot of credit. He still had a lot of fun.
Carnoustie, I can understand being a little wayward and not making par.
My God.
The course I'm playing is definitely not Carnoustie-level difficult, that's for sure.
It was tragic. It was tough to watch. Trevor Rieske has a great question that all of us want to know. And if any listeners don't know about Adam's famous Sergio gif, I'll include it in the show notes on the website. But Trevor wants to know, how is the Sergio GIF uploaded? Like, is it an organized folder? Is it right on the desktop? Or do you just always have it ready to go?
So because of, if anyone who knows me knows that I'm very organized with, like, all of my stuff on my computer. It's just kind of like an OCD thing. And so all of my GIFs that I have are actually organized by player and then by year that I made the GIF. So for Sergio, he has his own folder just like everybody else. And then from there, it's the title of the GIF is just stare. Like, there is nothing else. I saw it randomly doing a random YouTube video search. Shows you where my life is at certain points. But I was doing a random YouTube video search, and I saw it come across, and I was like, okay, I have to grab this. And the upload is basically I just search for the word stare, and it shows up, and that's how it gets done.
How fast can you get it up if you need it?
Where are we talking about GIFs? Regular stuff. 5-6 seconds, you know.
Well played. I did not see that one coming. Jay Rigdon wants to know, if we get 4 first-time major winners again this year, but none are Sergio, will you just give up on golf or life even?
The deletion of my Twitter account might have to come into play at some point.
Why don't you just explain the Sergio thing to anyone that's not that familiar with it?
Yeah,
because I don't even know. I don't even know at this point.
Yeah, so I actually, I did a mailbag post last week, and most of the questions, as I'm sure you can imagine, were about Sergio in general. To be perfectly honest, like the Sergio love didn't actually start right away. Like I was actually when I first started watching golf, like I was one of those people who, you know, wasn't in love with Tiger and Phil for whatever reason, you know, and. I feel a little bad about that at this point for not really truly appreciating like how good they actually were. And I'm sure that a lot of people feel that way now. My favorite guys to watch were actually like David Duval and John Daly. And I didn't really get hooked on Sergio until like I started to know a little bit more about the actual game itself. Like, you know, he's just such a good ball striker. I'm always going to gravitate more towards ball strikers than anything else. And you know, even though he's obviously, he's done some things in the past that are definitely way offside, both either on the course and off the course, especially as it relates to Tiger. You know, it just seems like he's a real and genuine person. Like the whole, like, you know, the tragic figure that he is, it appeals to me in some way. And you know, on top of that, you know, the totally like unique swing that he has, like lag for days, so much trash. Like he's the perfect guy to watch, really, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's kind of I don't want to say sad tale, because it's not. I mean, he's had an incredible career, but he's almost viewed as like a sympathetic figure at this point. It's hard to really dislike him at this point, I think. Some people still do, but has he done really anything in the last, you know, aside from like the 2013 players, has he done anything in the last 5 years that really deserves scorn from anyone?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, the Tiger fried chicken remark aside,
not his best,
not his best at all, but no, I don't see what the hatred is for him now, aside from people hanging on to, you know, whatever they didn't like about him previously. You know, he's getting married this year apparently, and you know, he looks like he's in good spirits. I mean, and that's obviously really good for him in trying to get that first major. So
all right. Brad Replinger wants to know, of all the GIFs you've collected, created over the years, which one is your all-time favorite and why?
It kind of has to be the Sergio one, I think.
I figured, so I was going to let you answer that, but then I want to know your second favorite.
Oh, God.
There's no 1A in this category.
It's really tough to... there's so many, look, all the Tiger things that I've done over the years. The other one, the only actual one that I can think of off the top of my head, 2013 President's Cup. There was a GIF that I made of Amy Mickelson getting Lindsey Vonn's golf cart out of some mud. And the only reason why I bring this up is because it wasn't broadcast live on TV in the U.S., for whatever reason. Again, we can get back to golf coverage conversations, but for whatever reason, I can't remember why, but it wasn't being broadcast live on TV in the U.S., but it was in Canada. And so, like, I was getting these GIFs, and I was just like, everyone, you know, everyone kind of just knew that it happened, but no one was seeing any visual proof of it. So I put it out there, and that was actually one of the GIFs that kind of took off for me because of it.
Do they like the WAGs in Canada more than they do the States?
Oh, God, no. That's... No, we have a little bit of class up here, to be honest.
All right. You made it You made it pretty far into that before you took your first big shot. But Jeff B. wants to know, what would you want to see carried over to the PGA Tour that the Euro Tour is currently testing?
They are... Look, they're doing a lot of different things that, you know, the PGA Tour should learn from, obviously. The number one thing is that they are cracking down way more on slow play than the PGA Tour ever has or probably ever will. You know, they've got their monitoring penalty situation, which I know was a big deal last year. I mean, they actually put out press releases of guys who had been penalized in the past under this new rule. That's the one for me that I'd like to see them implement more often. And then obviously any of the stuff, like even this week in Australia, they've got, you know, that combination stroke play match play event that's going on. Anything that kind of changes up what we see on a weekly basis would be nice, but it's the slow play thing that I would love to see more than anything.
Yeah. The Euro Tour is just, they're drunk over there. They're getting drunk, listing a bunch of crazy ideas up on a board, and then like the next morning figuring out their best ones and then going for it. I love it.
They should open up like a portion of their website to just solicit feedback for like, you know, crazy ideas for people like us to just email them with. And
thank you. I want a part-time consulting job. I got some ideas.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh man, and they could, the social stuff can make its way over to the States anytime soon. That'd be fantastic. They're having a lot of fun over there. The awkward reporter was great. They're always coming up. They got something coming up their sleeves. Like I don't even know what's coming next. I spent some time with Jimmy Kennedy down in South Africa actually, and they got some stuff going on.
Their social account is just so good. Like there's nothing. And to be honest, like the PGA Tour account's not bad. It's just, you know, they're pretty much just going to stick to, you know, whatever's happening on the course, and that's fine. But, like, you know, the European Tour is just so good at managing all their social stuff.
Yep. Biting tongues on all that. So let's see. Oh, there was one funny one here. Oh, AMN. I can't even read the Twitter handle. Worst putting stroke at the Pro-Am and why? Really only accepting Chris Berman, but how? He lives in Hawaii. I just thought that was funny.
Chris Berman is, I think it was either Will Gray or Ryan Lavender who tweeted it out this week. There was like a list of handicaps, and it actually said that Chris Berman was a 16, which, no. I mean, if Chris Berman, like I said to Ryan on Twitter, like if Chris Berman's a 16, like I'm a four-time major winner. Like he is so bad. And I don't understand, like, he plays a lot of golf, like, and it's anyone, like, his swing is terrible, his putting stroke is awful, like, there's nothing positive to say about what he does on the course.
He's the poster for what is wrong with the AT&T. But we're going to get you out of here on this. Friend of the podcast, Sarah Endicott. She just sent this in. I just got this now. Given the option, would you take a Sergio Major or a Phil U.S. Open in 2017? That's a lot of responsibility.
It is. I love Phil. I don't think he's ever going to get a U.S. Open. I'm concerned. I actually wrote a little bit about it today. I'm concerned about what we're kind of seeing from him. He's always been prone to these like blow up holes and all that kind of stuff. But like it's just, it's not good. There's a lot of inconsistency right now. And look, it could just be a stretch of the last few weeks, but. He's got some issues there. But as much as I love the guy, look, the answer is always going to be Sergio. Like there's no someone asked me in my mailbag last week if I would rather have a Sergio Major or someone from Canada win a major for the first time since Mike Weir won in 2003, and the answer there is still Sergio. So there's no getting around that. It's definitely him.
You have shown where your loyalties lie. You're willing to turn your back on your country like that. That's at a time like this. That's
coming from
hurt.
A guy who left his own country to live somewhere else.
I went to go scout the talent in Europe and see what I could bring back. All right, so all right, let's end it on that with you professing your love for Sergio Garcia. And unless there's anything we missed,
no, I think we're good.
All right, we're safe. Adam Sarson, thank you for your time, and we will do it again. Let's try for this summer again.
Sounds good.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, man.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
20, that's better than most.
How about in?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect